Hello, this is Tyler Posey, and you are listening to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast.
Into this house we're born, into this world we're thrown, like a dog without a bone, like an actor out alone, right is on the storm.
Everyone, and welcome to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast, episode number 133. Today we're talking about Teen Wolf season 6, episode 1, Memory Loss, season 6 premiere, final premiere of Teen Wolf. I'm Karen, and I'm joined, as always, by Natalie. Hey Nat, what's up?
Not always.
I mean, pretty much like exclusively.
95% of the time.
95, like 99.9.
I don't know, we've had over 100 episodes, so we could actually probably run that statistic, like how many episodes we've both been on. Who wants to take up that fun job?
Not me. But if you would like to, this is called a segue.
God.
If you would like to, you can always get in contact with us on Twitter at NATW Podcast, through email at natwpodcast@gmail.com, our Tumblr, notanotherteenwolfpodcast.com, and Instagram, which is also NATW Podcast.
Mm-hmm. I really liked your segue there.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, it kind of takes it away when I like literally point out the segue, but you know. So let's jump right into the discussion because I'm actually really excited to talk about this one. It's been a while since we talked about an episode, since we did an episode recap.
Yes, it has. It has been many moons. I can't remember when did season 5 end?
Goodness. April?
Maybe.
It was in the spring because we were like, oh, are they going to turn it around quickly for like a June premiere? And then that came and went and we literally had no news. And it wasn't until like a couple months after that that we found out it was going to premiere in November. So it's been a good long while.
Was it even as late as April? Was it earlier? I'm sure I could just look this up.
Yeah, but what's the fun in that? Let's just sound like we have no idea what we're talking about instead. But getting into this episode, which, like I said, is called Memory Loss for obvious reasons, we've seen the cold open before, so that wasn't a big surprise. We talked about it on one of our previous episodes, but we can kind of break it down a little bit here as well, especially now that we've seen the whole episode. Once again, I think Hayden is a total badass. She was pretty cool in that opener. And she and Liam are having some terrible dates as of late. And I'm wondering if this is foreshadowing doom for their relationship.
That's harsh. Why do you take it so badly, Karen? Why, that's like cutting right in there. Okay, so is this a metaphor for doom coming for their relationship, that they can't have any successful dates and so therefore they are cursed? Maybe.
I mean, it kind of feels like it. We do know that they're going to have a little bit of trouble because Jeff said that at the New York Comic Con panel, but in terms of like doom or death, I mean, I don't know, that's maybe taking it a little too far, but I think it's interesting that their best date so far, they ended up fighting a kid whose parents were kidnapped by some ghostwriters, so, it's not great.
You know, yeah, it's not. There isn't too much, focus here on Hayden's powers, except for, she's strong enough to lift up the car. But there's not too much focus on, like, oh, how she's been adjusting to being in the werewolf pack. It's sort of all just taken as a given. No one's really having a moment in this episode of, hey, here's what I can do with my powers. It's all very established. Do you like that? Or did you want more of, like, hey, here's what's changed?
No, it felt very comfortable. It felt like everybody was just kind of going about their daily routine that we, you know, looked away for a couple of months and we're peering back in and things are settled. And I think that's really smart when any show does that, because it feels more normalized. It feels like there's less exposition. You don't have to explain the situation, especially after six seasons. Like, we know these characters, we know kind of how they work together. So to just sort of look back in and see what's going on right before the big thing happens that changes everything, it was kind of nice.
Yeah, and we get that later on with Malia as well, which we can talk about at length when we get past our cold open that we've already seen. But that was another aspect of, like, hey, a thing that is now normal that we didn't see before.
Yeah, and speaking of that, like, even the interactions between them, even if things sort of have changed, it still feels very normal. Like, we kind of look back in on Scott and Styles' relationship, and we see that Scott's totally okay, that the town doesn't need them anymore, but Styles isn't. And that's kind of new.
Why do you think he's so desperate to be needed? Is it really just that he doesn't trust that it's okay? Or is there something else, like, about, like, that he feels like he doesn't have any other purpose or something like that? Or he doesn't have any ambition, or that he just doesn't want people to leave, like, that he wants things to stay the same, even if that means lots of murderous deaths that they have to solve?
I don't think that it's necessarily about him not having ambition, because we saw that he wants to be a detective or, you know, an officer like his father. So I think he kind of knows where he wants to go. But I think it's probably, it's got to have something to do with the fact that maybe it's so normalized for him now that if he doesn't have something to do, if it the supernatural isn't involved in some way, he kind of is like, okay, what is this place? Like, it's just become so normal for him that maybe he just likes helping people, which is another reason why we know he wants to be a detective or an officer like his father. So but you also have to think back to what happened in season five, and a huge part of his arc in season five was the fact that he didn't want his friends to split up, that he didn't, ironically enough, want to be forgotten, and he didn't want everybody to kind of go off in their own direction. And now that that moment is even closer, it makes a lot of sense to me that he's like, oh, they still need us, and he's still excited about it.
Yeah, it's just there's got to be some motivation behind this mindset that is like, just that it's, you know, even Scott is kind of like, yeah, let's move on, you know, whether what exactly it is that has Style so convinced or so concerned when Scott is not, you know, and I suppose, like, being, you know, human and stuff like that and not being a werewolf, you know, Scott has, you know, had this thing be, you know, it's not necessarily a curse for him anymore, but it's certainly, he's the one who's literally not normal, and he might be looking forward to not having to deal with that on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas for Styles, I guess either he, you know, doesn't have that aspect, and he has the kind of has the aspect of, I know about the supernatural world, therefore I'm responsible and no one's ever going to stop. Like, whether it's like an anxiety thing of like, no one is ever going to be able to help because they don't know about it, but we know about it, so we have to, or whether it is more of a still anxiety based, but like selfish motivation of like, I don't want things to change, even if it means lots of murders.
And if you look at them as people, Scott is a lot more comfortable giving people the option to take care of themselves, where I think Styles is a lot more of a cynic. And so he's going to want to step in and help people and not trust them to take care of themselves. So I think that's another reason why they're kind of having this discussion at this moment in time.
Yeah, it is a very, I would love to know what was inside Scott's head, like, hearing Styles talk like this, if you know what I mean. Like, I would love to have been, not been Scott in that moment, but I want to know from his perspective, like, how he feels about hearing Styles say that, what he thinks is driving this in Styles. So, but, you know,
yeah, the look on his face.
Yeah, sorry, go on.
The look on his face was a bit like his like alpha
dad.
Yeah, alpha dad, like, oh, you're cute. Look, it'll be okay. Let me take care of this situation kind of thing.
No, I really thought so too. Like, it was very, I don't mean condescending in a bad way, but it was like condescending in the kind of like, oh, Styles, honey, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, I don't mean it in a like rude way, but there was something about yeah. it, like, that was a little like, oh, like, I know where this is coming from. But it turns out that they do need them. So.
They do. And you know what? This episode, despite having some really dark and sad moments, was really funny. Like, and it wasn't just Styles. Like, a large part of it was Styles. But Sprayberry as Liam, like, some of the faces he pulls is great. Even Posey, like, Scott is very, he's the alpha dad now, so he's very stoic. But, like, he's got a couple lines in there, too, and a couple of moments where they're just really funny, and I like that they were able to balance that once again.
And Malia.
Yeah, Malia. Malia's always great.
Oh, nothing. I'm just thinking about the funny parts. I'm just thinking about Sheriff reacting to them and how much fun those scenes with Lyndon are, where he gets to do the whole eye roll at them.
Yeah. But getting into the main part of this episode, while Hayden and Liam are on their date, the guitar rolls into frame, and there's this kid who's in there who says he's lost his parents. They were attacked and they've just disappeared. And so he gets taken to the station. His name's Alex. And Scott comes in. This is, you know, of course, when they do need us. Scott comes in and uses his claws in order to peek inside the kid's head and look at that memory. And they see the Ghost Riders, and the kid knows that he's going to be next. And so he wants to be locked up to be kept safe. And we talked a little bit about this before, but seeing the whole episode now, like, I'm truly afraid of these Ghost Riders. Like, they look very human. They act very human, but their aggression and their faces really sell that for me, that they're the villains this season.
Yeah, I mean, when we later on see Alex getting taken from the sheriff's station, I have some questions about, like, what they're actually capable of, like, or, like, you know, because, like, how they rip the roof off, but they don't really rip the roof off in reality, like, it's, like, an alternate, like, there does seem to be something alternate reality going on here with them.
Yeah, it's gotta be.
But yeah.
It feels very much like a parallel universe, that they're able to pull people from the one universe into the other, and that's how they can, like, destroy the roof without really destroying the roof. And I think how people actually going into our next point, like, they investigate the car, the pack, and Malia can't smell them, so they're not alive, but Lydia can't sense them, so they're not dead. And it feels very much like they've just got pulled into another dimension.
I really loved that, like, that little, like, bit of comparison there of, like, well, this, but this. Like, I really loved that way of assessing it, like, that they can use all of these, like, resources. But this was also the part where Malia came on the scene, like, she travels on the scene as a coyote, like a full coyote, which she can now morph into. How long have we known she can do this? Like, I mean, obviously this is how we found her originally, but at what point did we know that she could start doing the full body thing?
I don't know, and I kind of like that they didn't explain it, although my guess is after confronting her mother and everything that went down around there, like, we know that Malia has changed in a lot of ways. The fact that this is, like, now the norm, that nobody was freaking out about it, that Lydia was prepared for it with clothes and everything, it was fine. And it felt like, once again, we took a step back from Beacon Hills, we're peeking back in, and we're seeing life as they know it, and it's not questioned, it has to be set up, it's just accepted, and it's so easy to slip right back into the show because of that.
Yeah, I mean, I really appreciated, I really liked, you know, not exactly humor value, but like normalization value, that they're all like, she's naked, here you go, clothes. Like, even the like the boys yeah. or whatever, like, it's just like, whatever. And because, of course, she wouldn't really care probably about that kind of thing. So I really liked that whole thing, that this is like a thing that she can do now. Like, I don't know if it's just that she like travels faster in coyote form, like why she had to be a coyote to get there, or if her powers are stronger when she's in the coyote form. So yeah, it's fun though. I like it.
Yeah. And another thing is, speaking of powers, is I really liked Lydia in this episode because she seems to be so comfortable with her banshee powers now, and she's paying more attention to when things feel off. She's not writing it off. She doesn't seem confused or scared. She's just taking a moment to assess her environment and kind of be like, okay, I hear noises here, or I realize that, you know, somebody's tapping, and because of that, I can hear something. And she's taking the time to make sure that she is using them to the benefit of the pack, even though I don't think she's like 100% sure how they work all the time. I think that's always going to be something she's working on and developing, but she's totally aware of what she's capable of now. And the idea that she was just like, well, I didn't sense them, so they're not dead. Like, she yeah. knows more about her powers than she has in the past.
What I felt strongly about here is that she trusts that what she's feeling is real, if you know what I mean. Like, that it, yes, obviously she's accepted that she's a banshee, but she's trusted, like, oh, I have a gut feeling about this or whatever. She knows that these feelings are real, as opposed to someone who started off everyone being like, she's the town crazy girl. That's really great, I think, you know what I mean? Like, that she's now like, nope, that... Okay, so that gut feeling means this. You know, she doesn't necessarily understand, like, the whys and the hows of how it works, but she knows what's true. So I really like that.
Yeah, definitely. But the interesting thing about that, too, is, like, she's not looking for trouble, whereas I think Styles is. He wants this to be supernatural. He wants to have another case to investigate. And everyone else is like, dude, I got, like, a psych test tomorrow. And, like, they're worrying about other normal things. And I kind of like that balance, because for Styles, who has a very analytical mind, of course he's going to try to see that there's a mystery here and then want to solve it. Whereas the other ones, I think, especially given that they're supernatural, like you were talking about before, maybe they want that more normalized life. They don't want to go sniffing around something that might not be any trouble, or go find trouble where there wasn't any previously. So the idea that Styles keeps coming up against this brick wall of his friends who are like, maybe we should just kind of drop it,
yeah.
is funny, but at the same time, like, kind of frustrating on his part, I'm sure.
Yeah, that scene of him when they're at school, and, you know, him interrupting Malia's school photograph, and the conversation with everyone afterwards, you know, where Scott's like, all psych majory about his problems. So what is it? Like, maybe you're sublimating the stress of graduating by avoiding key milestones or something like that. And everyone's like, yep. What? Interesting. Supernatural's episode this week also included someone being like, it's called sublimination. Like, Sam says it to Dean this week. So everyone's doing some advanced Freudian psych on television in the Supernatural world this week. But I mean, It certainly is a coping mechanism, and Styles certainly is doing it, but there is a real problem at hand, you know, usually. I think way back in when I've been doing some work on our archives, the podcast, like doing some, you know, looking at old episodes and some of the links we had in our master post were dead, and I've been fixing them, and right back, like, really early on, I think, in when we were still recapping season 1 and 2 on a rewatch, you know, we were innocent little babies, but we're like, nothing good ever comes of not listening to Styles, basically. And it was just like a random show yep. note that I scrolled by, and I'm like, season 6, we're still on this, aren't we? We're still on this. Look, guys, you gotta listen to him forever. He's always going to be right. And that's definitely happening here, but I do I understand their perspective of being like, dude, chill, because he is acting a little crazy about it. Like, yes, is obviously a big problem, and we know that it's going to happen, so he's going to be proven right. But from their perspective of, like, wanting to get on with their lives, he's a little, you know, a little manic about it. Like, you know, even when Lydia's like, you've dragged me out of bed at least once a week, you know, to go sniffing around something that turned out to be nothing. This isn't the first time. Like, it's really understandable that they're like this because Styles has been doing this about everything for the past however many months. And I find that really interesting. And it's easy to see why they're kind of like, shut up, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. And speaking of previous episodes, I just realized we didn't do a quote thing, which we usually do. Guys, we are so bad at this. Like, we can't even remember how to run our own episodes.
Well, we could do quotes at the end once we've, so that we have them in context, if you know what I mean. Like, we could have our quotes at the end so we have them in context. You know, we'll just say
that. I don't know if I could remember any. We'll throw them in there for next episode and make sure that we... Because I like doing quotes, but I just totally forgot about it. Speaking of...
Little ones, which I'm sure we'll get to. One of which was in this scene when when he was kept talking to Malia while she was having the photo, and then, you know, the photographer kept telling him off, and he kept stepping back, and he was like, go ahead, look pretty. And then, like, he was, like, stepping back in, which I really loved because I don't know if they're still meant to be together. I assume not, but I like that they're very cute and comfortable. It's really...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're definitely not together anymore, but it's not weird. Like, it doesn't even feel weird, and nobody's making it weird, so that's a really comforting thing, especially, like, considering how much I love Malia and how much I love Lydia and how much I love Styles' relationship with both of them. The fact that it's not weird is just nice from a fan point of view. Speaking of looking for trouble and always listening to Styles, it is a supernatural event, what is going on right now, and we get a little bit more insight into these Ghost Riders, specifically their guns, because we see that it's sort of a magic bullet that comes out of it. There's that green discharge, and it turns the glass of the car windshield blue. And I just wanted to know, how do you think that these bullets work? The only thing that I could think of was that they somehow mark the victim in a way that only the riders can see, and then that way they can find them later on, and whoever has seen them, whoever has come in contact with their bullet, they know that that's their next target.
I really don't know. I really liked the scene of them going back to the car and you know, being like, see, it's just normal, and then realizing that it's not, you know, that all of the others were, like, not shattered in the same way and stuff like that. But I have no idea. Like you mean like a homing missile, like crazy tracking mist or something like that? I don't really
know.
Yeah.
Also, how many cars get shot up in Beacon Hills? Because there was a lot, and they were, like, covered in blood. It was really intense.
Yeah, so presumably that was the lot of all of the, like, cars that had been, like, you know, possessed. Not possessed, like, what's the word? Impounded, you know, from criminal scenes or accidents. And they're kind of looking around being like, actually, this isn't what it normally looks like when someone shoots through a windscreen. I'm like, yeah, that's true. I'm not sure why they have so many shot up cars in Beacon Hills, California. That's a bit worrying, but maybe they've been there for a while. Maybe it's like 20 years worth or something.
God, that would be horrible, actually.
That would be in no way accurate, because they do big sell-offs of, like, police seized stuff, like, all the time, like, if it's never claimed. So, no, apparently there's just a lot of gun crime in Beacon Hills, so, cool, that's not worrying. But
add that to the supernatural crime, and I'm moving out of Beacon Hills immediately. But speaking of the school photos and all of that, that candid that the girl shoots of them at the lunch table, like, you know that's going to come back to haunt us. That Styles is going to disappear from that.
It's going to be badly photoshopped out of it, yeah.
Oh my God, it's going to be awful, and I am not prepared.
Do we know that photographer? She's been in it before. Is that Tim Andrews' daughter? That
it is somebody's daughter. I don't remember whose. But yeah, she's been in quite a few episodes.
Hi, her. She's a regular classmate, extra person.
Nice that they keep recurring like that, to see them again and again.
I've got to say, that was one of my favorite things about Glee. this Glee, I was thinking to myself the other day, I can't believe that this is a world in which Glee has not only occurred, but finished. While Glee was occurring, I thought Glee would be something that we were experiencing as a collective consciousness forever, because it was so unbelievably, overwhelmingly huge. And I can't believe that Glee is gone. I'm not sorry, but I can't believe it. Anyway, one of the best aspects of that show in terms of world building was the background students, like, remaining the same, and then very quietly some of those would get built up into characters. And so, yeah, I like that kind of thing in especially something like a high school show where they, you know, they have to, or they choose to keep the same extras to keep that, like, slight level of realism. So, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, it definitely fills it out a bit more.
Yeah.
Speaking of new characters, though, hello, Mr. Douglas. We know who you are. You are definitely evil, and the whole class is in love with this new teacher, and I just...
Am I missing something? Has there been news?
I mean, because that's... Isn't that Pete Plotchnik?
I guess. Is he meant to be evil?
Yes.
He's probably evil.
Yeah, because everyone's in love with him, and I'm just sitting here like, do you guys not remember Jennifer Blake?
No,
because I do.
They're young. They weren't there for
Jennifer. I know, but the seniors need to teach them some things about new teachers in school. What did you think about him at first glance, though?
I loved his drawing, cat, open parentheses, deceased, close parentheses. So I was like, oh, he's cute. I'm sorry that he's evil, though. But
he had nice hair.
He's very, like, Aryan. Maybe he's in some way like an immortal Nazi who's going to be a part of Tank Wolf's story.
Or he is Tank Wolf.
Maybe he is Tank Wolf. I don't know. Isn't Tank Wolf, like, mutated?
We never saw him, so we don't know what
he's
he can do.
He's been in a
tank
for 70 years. I think he's probably not that well, but he might have been healing.
Right, if he's a werewolf, and who knows what the Dread Doctors did to him. It's my understanding that this person is Pete Plotchnik, who is the Nazi werewolf, so...
Okay, so he is definitely Tank Wolf, Pete Plotchnik. How have you... I'm confused. I did not... Hang on, I'm going to just Google. Karen, so they cast this guy, and I remember the casting announcement.
Karen. Okay.
But did they actually say who he was playing?
Pete Plotchnik is playing Mr. Garrett Douglas, a charming, handsome, young new teacher, the kind everyone has a crush on.
How do you spell his last name?
Ploszek.
Okay. And you think that this is Tank Wolf?
I'm pretty sure. Like, somebody has said that somewhere.
Okay. Interesting. All right. So,
I talked to Jeff, like, 2 days ago, and he was talking about how he's doing his German accent and stuff. Like, yes, this is Tank Wolf.
And this is released. So this is in the universe via Jeff.
Yes, the interview went out today, actually. And he said Pete really had a lot of fun with the German accent.
Okay, he's Tank Wolf. Jeff, I don't know if we were meant to know that this early, but he's Tank Wolf. Yeah, so he's Garrett Douglas, and he is also Tank Wolf. So, hashtag spoiler alert.
Right, I don't know how much you want to, like, cut out of there. Because, like, we don't have to say it, or we can hint at it.
I mean, if Jeff said it, like, he's either he's either the werewolf, he's either Tank Wolf, or he is, like, a side Nazi who's, like, stuck with the Tank Wolf, if you know what I mean, who's like, again, this is Supernatural last week, this week, was like immortal Nazis as well. So I'm wondering what's going on here. I'm wondering if this is kind of a message about the universe right now. But
could be.
So Tank Wolf or a Tank Wolf associate is going to be the hot teacher who is interested in Schrodinger's cat. So sorry about it, everyone. Don't have a crush on a Nazi.
Yeah, he's not going to be a good guy.
Jeff, okay. I really don't know if you were meant to like. I mean, whatever.
Okay, I'm so going back to Lydia, Lydia hears the white noise of the television and has a vision of being struck by lightning. And I was wondering if you thought that this was an indication, like a clue that this was the Wild Hunt, the Riders on the Storm, the Ghost Riders, that whole thing. Or do you think this has something to do with like Kira or something else altogether? What was the significance of her having that vision?
I had no freaking idea. I was like, the electrocution, like the thing, I was like, why, what? Is that when she heard mm-hmm. the music or no, it's not when she heard the music, so... It was just, I had no idea why that happened, to be honest. I was like, why has this happened? I don't know.
It was really shocking that she got struck by lightning and was, like, flown back. I mean, she was fine, obviously, because it wasn't real. But, like, even in the vision part, she was fine. But I thought that was really interesting. And, like, I think it was probably just a, hey, maybe you should think about this whole storm thing. And it was, like, either the Banshee powers or other Banshees or however the hell this works was trying to warn her like what was coming on. The only other thing I could think of was that it had something to do with Theo, which might seem kind of random, but given that Kira has lightning powers and we know from promos that they're probably using Kira's sword to somehow bring Theo back, I thought maybe that was like an indication of that. But I think it's the Riders on the Storm Wild Hunt kind of thing.
Yeah, it could be. It's like first clue, and then the universe is like, hey, Lydia, you need a less subtle clue. I'm going to stick this song in your head, if you know what I mean. Like, maybe it's like you're not getting it yet. There's someone upstairs being like, Lydia, come on. You know, here's a less subtle clue. So, yeah.
Yeah. That's funny, though. So Scott and Stiles go visit Alex's house. And Liam and Megan end up there, too, because the compass, all of their compasses are going crazy, and it doesn't point toward north, and they follow it until it just keeps spinning, and they end up at the house as well. And I really loved this scene, because when they walk into the house, it looks abandoned. Not only does it look abandoned, but it's almost like it's decaying. There's, like, spider webs everywhere, dust everywhere. They go up to Alex's room, and it's absolutely normal, except for the fact that the parents are missing from pictures and that sort of thing. And there's, like, a breeze coming from under the bed, which was really creepy. And Scott goes back downstairs, sees that there was, like, he saw earlier there were plates on the table. He kind of looks away, looks back, and all of a sudden they're gone. There's more dust, and they end up going back to Alex's room, and it's empty. And I love the idea that the house is just getting more and more abandoned as these people get more and more forgotten by the universe.
Yeah, and I need to know how this works, because obviously at the end of the episode, when Alex has already been taken, you know, Stiles, who he remembers Alex because he's already also marked, but, you know, Clark doesn't remember Alex and stuff like that. You know, it's like, I have no idea, like, there's been no one in here, all of that kind of stuff. So none of that, I want to know, like, how soon people start forgetting, because there is the, you know, like, because these guys all remember, they know that Alex exists and they know that he had parents that existed, if you know what I mean. They're there looking for Alex's parents conceptually, mm-hmm. except that Alex's parents have been erased. And then presumably they'll all forget Alex as well. So I want to know, like, how fast this happens, or, like, it's like, does it happen only to the people that knew them, or, like, you know, are they actually erased from, like, the universe, like, public record? If you, like, look someone up, they're not there, because that is what was implied in this episode. Like, they said something like, you know, that we, you know, looking up something of people that there's no record of, like, in the police, you know? Like, did Alex actually give the parents names? Like, what the hell happened? Like, they didn't make very clear, like, if this is just, like, conceptually forgotten, you know, by the people that interact with them, or if it's literally the universe never had these people existing.
I think it's the universe literally has had these people never existing. I think the records do disappear, which is really concerning because that really means that they have been erased. I don't know how long it takes for something like that to happen. That being said, I do have a theory about direct focus versus indirect passive awareness. So since the kids were directly focusing on Alex and trying to figure out this mystery, they hung on a little bit more than, say, the officer who was passively aware that there was a kid in lockup at some point but wasn't really focusing on the case, maybe went about and did other things during her day. So, and I think, too, that's why Lydia ended up remembering Styles a little bit longer, because she knew what was going on. She understood the concept of the Wild Hunt. She was actively thinking about the idea that Styles was going to be forgotten soon, whereas everyone else was kind of focusing on other things. They kind of walked out of the picture, like in Scott's case, and they kind of got distracted and therefore wasn't focusing specifically on Styles and forgot him much more quickly. Or there could be other reasons as well, but that was sort of one that immediately came to mind.
I don't know. It's I feel like they know. Like, it's not like, oh, inconsistency or anything. But at the moment, I'm confused about the erasure process and yeah, if it just happens all at once. Because with Styles, it seems to start happening at all at once. Though he's still there, if you know what I mean. Like, people are forgetting him while he's still in this universe before the thing actually comes and takes him, which you get the hint of earlier in the episode with the paperwork that he thought he filled out, and then the jersey. The jersey I picked up on, the paperwork, I was just like, I didn't get necessarily the significance of it the first time around, even though I knew Charles was going to be taken. I was like, oh, he hasn't filled it out yet, or he hasn't committed to it yet. You know, like, the jersey, I was like, okay, that's, something's happening. Like, people are forgetting him already, except for the people who don't know him are not considering him, whereas the people who do know him and interacting with are still seeing him. So,
right.
And this happens because he actually physically sees the rider. Or is it the other way around? He sees the rider because it happens, like...
Oh, no. Let's not get into that, because that's already, like, messing with my mind. I think seeing the rider is definitely what starts it. And then, of course, he sees, like, the horse's hooves from under the bed. And then he gets shot at with this magic bullet thing. And that, like, it really speeds up the process from then on out.
Yeah. So, did no one else see the rider? Like, when was the first time that Styles saw them? In the bedroom? Is that the first time he saw them?
It had to have happened before then.
When?
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Scott sees them in the memory, which doesn't count, apparently.
Right. And don't Liam and Hayden see it?
No, I thought Liam and Hayden just found the kid afterwards. I don't know if they see it.
I should have watched it twice.
No, they can't physically see it. They can't physically, like, they may have seen, like, a crash or whatever happened, but I don't think they could see the thing, or it might just be that the car rolls into, you know, in with Alex, and I don't think they see the actual event taking place.
Yeah.
I don't know.
This season, I think, is going to be very detail-oriented, which I'm actually excited about, but I think we're going to really have to pay attention to not only what happens, but also, like, sequence of events and the little things that change that you don't necessarily realize are issues until later on, which is the kind of stuff that I like paying attention to.
I know, it's all crazy, but anyway, he does see the guy in the house, so he sees the horse inside the house, which is normal and stuff. And then I think that, yeah, he's there being like, guys, I just saw him, I'm gonna go, and stuff like that.
Yeah. I want to sort of change the focus a little bit to Lydia right now, because after they kind of figure out what's going on, and especially when Lydia figures out that it's the Wild Hunt, she says she doesn't want Styles to kiss her, and she does anyway. I mean, it's on the cheek. And I don't want to get into this too much, but I know that some fans, like, really aren't into the Lydia and Styles things for legitimate reasons for, you know, themselves and how they view these characters and how they interact. I thought it was really cute, though, and I like that they're comfortable, but I'm also wondering why, like, I know Lydia likes Styles. Why do you think she told him not to kiss her?
I think just because...
Is it just, like, the relationship
Not the moment. Like, I think it's not, like, you know, when he's... When someone says that, like, oh, my God, you're so smart, I could kiss you, they kind of mean it in a grabbing and, like, you know, they kind of mean it in the grabbing and over-the-top way, and I think she's kind of like,
yeah,
don't do that. I don't think she means it as in, like, this is the big romantic moment, you know? Like, I don't feel... I feel like that even if it was... I feel like even if they were in a relationship, it could have still been a moment where the meaning, the meaning of being like, I could kiss you right now, you know, kind of means like, don't, like, as in not the moment. And also I don't know if she's thinking about him in that mindset, you know, and I feel like that her feelings for him are going to be explored in the time that he's not there, in the time that she comes to terms with, like, what it means to be with someone, you know, to kind of love someone in a more mature way, like as a partner or whatever, that it's not necessarily like dating, that it's like, wow, this is actually the only person that is my partner in life or whatever. And I feel like,
yeah,
it's going to be that kind of realization as opposed to like dating, as I said. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
And I like the idea that maybe she doesn't quite know how she feels about him, because you can deeply care about somebody but also not know if you guys are a good fit together as, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, partners, whatever. And I kind of like the idea of, like you were saying, exploring what he means to her while he's gone. It's sort of that idea of you don't know what you have until you've lost it. And for her to kind of get back all of those memories and remember why she cares about this person so much might make it easier for it to, like, for her to see it all laid out in front of her. And then at the end of this arc to just be like, wow, you actually really do mean a lot to me. And I can't imagine my life without you. Like, my life without you really sucked. So let's just be together.
Yeah. This is such a fan fiction trope as well. Like, it's such a, I don't mean that in a bad way, but it's such, like, a fulfillment of, like a fan fiction amnesia story, which is, like, very popular in shipping, of, like, someone having amnesia and then, like, falling in love with the person they were secretly in love with, or, like, being open about, like, oh, you guys are, like, so, you know, person A gets amnesia, person B's always been in love with person A or whatever, and then person A, while having amnesia, like, without any, like, kind of whatever the filters that they would have been using in their former personality or whatever in order to keep, you know, whatever feelings they had on the down low or, you know, control their life, you know, that person A is being like, oh, why aren't we together? You know, like, and the person B being like, oh my God, this is all coming out in the open. Sorry. That was a bit garbled. I can't describe it very well, but it's a very popular thing that, like, oh, someone not remembering someone and then, like, seeing them, discovering them while not remembering them is like, hey, I do love that person. So this could totally be that.
Yeah, which, like, honestly, I'd be fine with. Like, yeah. I think the fact that it's a typical fanfic arc doesn't take away from the fact that it's legitimate and that it's also very sweet, and especially given everything that they've been through over the years and where they started and where they are now, like, it's kind of the perfect relationship to do that with.
Yeah, and I don't know, people probably will be mad about the whole did it anyway and runs off, but I thought it was fantastic. Yeah. Like, even in not a shipping way, even if they were not, like I just thought that is very, very, very cute, and it was not, you know, if anyone is thinking that that is kind of a representation of something problematic, not just in the ship, but in, like, you know, treatment of women and women's autonomy, like, I understand that there's going to be, that there could be a backlash to that, but I feel like it's not quite the hill to die on if that's something that you're concerned about, because this is, like, two people with a very established closeness, and she's not literally going to be like, you violated me for that. Like, I understand how it works. It's certainly, like, the back and forth on paper, I understand why that might bother someone, but this is not that moment, I don't.
Mm-hmm. Also, like, can you just imagine replacing Lydia with Scott and the same thing happening? Like,
for
so into
sure.
It.
Like, I
it would be the same.
Yeah. I feel for real that if Scott had said that and Styles was like, I, you know, do you mean replacing Lydia with Scott or replacing Styles with Scott? Because I could see this is between any combination of those people.
I mean, like, Styles kissing Scott on the cheek and running away anyway.
Yes, for sure. Like, if he was like, you're so smart, I could kiss you, and Scott's like, please don't, and he was like, did it anyway. Like, totally.
Yeah.
Totally. I can see it, but, anyway, moving on.
Yeah.
She certainly has a thoughtful moment after it, so.
She does, yeah. I really thought that was played off well, that she wasn't, like, over-the-top giddy or anything. She was still very Lydia, but she was like, oh, that was nice, you know, and, like, just kind of rolled her eyes at him, too.
I also really liked that, you know, that discovery scene of the Riders of the Storm, like, presumably she's read about them before, is, like, came from, like, her reciting the lyrics that she was in her head that she didn't know, and Styles identifying them. If you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really liked that combination of, you know, resources.
Yeah, team effort. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's always nice when they can work together and it's not one person pulling all the weight. Switching gears again, let's talk about Liam a little bit, because Liam totally thinks he can be the alpha, and I'm not saying, you know, I agree or disagree with him or anything like that. Mason supports him. Hayden maybe doesn't, and I was wondering why you thought that was. Is it more like she doesn't actually believe in him, or she's worried and wouldn't want him to be the alpha?
Maybe both. I mean, I kind of wouldn't necessarily. Like, I know that this is allegedly where the show's meant to go, but I would not necessarily trust Liam to lead, like, a children's party scavenger hunt, let alone like a Teen Wolf mystery, you know, like a murder mystery. Like, it's just not really his personality. Like, just because he's been the werewolf there the longest, just because he's been the beta the longest out of anyone, it doesn't mean that much. I don't think he's necessarily leadership material. You know, he tries very hard, but I don't know. I don't know if he's, like, a very reassuring, like, dominatrix dad presence, and I think that that's what it's gonna take. So I think Hayden might be better.
I would agree with that, actually. I think with Liam, he's very immature still, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. It's not a mark against his character, but he's young and he's not as experienced as Scott is. I mean, Scott's been through so much before Liam ever even showed up, and he kind of had to work through this journey on his own, and I think that gives you a level of maturity that is a little bit deeper and truer than if somebody's like, okay, this is right, this is wrong, this is what you have to do. And that person could still come to the same conclusions as the other one, but the fact that Liam didn't necessarily work toward it as much as Scott did means that he's not really in the same place mentally. So I like the idea of Liam eventually taking over, but I think he's going to have to grow up a bit more before that happens.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know if it would fall to him by default, like, just because, you know, he's there. But I don't know, maybe some people go their whole life without being, you know, having what it takes to be an alpha. Derek is a great example of that. Like, he, you know, people argue about that still as well, but he became an alpha. He was not good at it. He was not a good leader. And he is much better as not a leader. You know, he's much better as a, you know, as an advisor and as a someone who takes orders and stuff like that, and some, and a support system, and he can use his experience in that way. But not everyone is cut out to be an alpha. And so, you know, I don't know if it would just fall to Liam by default or if it should. Like, I don't know. And I don't know if Hayden's concern is like, oh, I don't want you to be in danger, or if it's like, you are kidding yourself, or if it's like, none of us should be talking about this or anything like that. So, I don't know. I mean,
yeah,
if he's her boyfriend and, you know, he's little, you know, ridiculous, derpy kind of like, haha, where, you know, he isn't wearing the pants in that relationship, let alone in a supernatural pack of crime fighters, you know? Like, so I feel like there could be a problem for her there, and it may just come from her knowing that it's not necessarily in his personality to have that.
I love that. Well, he's not necessarily wearing the pants in that relationship, so how can he be the alpha? That is the perfect analogy, so I think that's great. I have a quick question about, like, actual plot details. Mm-hmm. The dead body in the school was the truck driver that they were chasing down at the beginning of the episode, right?
I didn't really notice. I was very confused as to why there was a dead body with a frickin' hole cut out of his head in the school. Like, I assume this is not to do with the Dread Doctors, and it is to do with Tank Wolf, but, not the Dread Doctors. It's not to do with the Wild Hunt, and it is to do with Tank Wolf. But I didn't notice. It could be. I mean, the one who Scott...
There was that figure that was standing, like, in the foreground. We couldn't quite see him. We only got, like, part of the back of his head. Like, he very much looked like Mr. Douglas. So I think I'm going to agree with you and say that it's probably Nazi werewolf territory.
Yeah. Do you think that they're going to leave the Nazi werewolf story to the youngins, if you know what I mean? Like, okay, you guys handle Tank Wolf while we handle the Wild Hunt. Like, here's your training wheels case with the Nazi werewolf. Or if they're both going to come together in some way.
I would love that, actually. I would love if they solved that case. And I think, you know, being a pack, there's always going to be crossover and they're always going to be helping each other. But I really love the idea of maybe Lydia, Malia, and Scott looking for the Ghost Riders and being like, look, we really have to focus on this. Clearly, there's another problem in Beacon Hills. Can you guys just, like, check it out for us? That would be a great way to train them. It would be a great way to see how they handle that situation. Also, just a really big show of trust.
Mm. We've got Corey, right? So Corey as the... Yeah. Corey. He's still there. Well, he's there and he's still got his chameleon powers, right? He didn't melt into the black goo or anything. Like, he was not exterminated or failed as a chimera. So my question is, does Hayden have only werewolf powers, or does she have chimera powers and werewolf powers?
I think she's a werewolf now. Mm-hmm. Like, she was dying or whatever, and now they saved her by turning her into an actual real werewolf.
So it healed all of her whatever jaguar or whatever powers she had before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting. So Corey survived because, I don't know, reasons. But were any of those chimeras, is he the only one left of the people that they created?
I believe so.
Besides Theo.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, so he's there. He's contributing, I guess. I'm still not sold on his moral fiber, but we'll see.
Yeah. I'm interested to see if they give him more this season, but I'm going to be completely honest. Like, I'm not looking forward to it. Like, he's a background character at this point. So we'll just have to see what happens. Maybe he'll get more and he'll become an integral part of the team. And like, I'd be fine with that. I have nothing against him, but as of right now, like, his power is invisibility. And that's just kind of how I look at him.
It was interesting to me that a lot of, you know, that himself, that quite a few world-building side characters were included in this episode, like, not just him, and obviously Mrs. Martin is around a fair bit for a variety of reasons, as a teacher in the school, and because she's, you know, Susan Walters has been involved in the show for a long time, and she's the parent of one of the children. But there was also the other teacher, like the science teacher of Scott's, I cannot remember her name, the lady who used to be on Queer as Folk, who was right. Like, really harsh on him, but then ended up being his like BFF, like tutor or whatever. So she was the one that he went to about the glass chemicals.
I totally forgot about her. You know, not until you brought it up.
She
yeah.
was not a random. She's been in the show before, and you know, she had that plot line with Scott and pushing him in his science classes. And she's still around as, I guess, some sort of, you know, teacher and a mentor that's enough for Scott to go to with, like, a problem, even if it's not, like, a supernatural problem. And so she was there as a random background, you know, who's been in the show before. And so it's just interesting, like, for in a behind-the-scenes way, that they would pay, like, these people, like, for, you know, a moment of their a time, basically, like Corey, that actor, and this teacher, and Clark as well, that they are continuing to keep quite a high payroll of recurring characters, you know, as opposed to like randoms who cost a lot less to just bring in someone and not have them recur as a named character. And it's obviously a good thing, but it's just quite a lot. And in this episode, I'm like, I wonder if she's going to have any more, like the teacher, or if, you know, because we've got quite a lot of teachers. We've got Mrs. Martin, we've got Tank Wolf, we've got Coach, you know, got other, I suppose other, some of the other teachers are dead. But yeah, it was just interesting that she was there, she was back for that. So I didn't necessarily yeah. know she was going to be.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that's cool. And, you know, speaking of Mrs. Martin, like, we get that line, those who see the Wild Hunt, beware, for you are already lost. And that clearly points us toward Stiles disappearing. And Mrs. Martin is the first person that forgets Stiles, that really, like, we see directly that, yes, he is starting to very much get erased. And it kind of falls in line from there. It goes to Liam, Hayden, Mason. And Liam has this line. He goes, does he even go here? And, like, I laughed, and then I got really sad. And that was, like, a really well-placed line, but also, like, terrible timing, because it was super funny, but then it made me really depressed.
I'm sorry. It was very Mean Girls. Do you even go to school?
It was. Yeah.
But, yeah. So, it really had, you know, kind of, it's not like his physical body has started to, like, you know, dissolve into the ether. He's there. He can talk to people. They just don't know who he is, and he has no identity and stuff like that. And that's miserable. And it's not like he forgets himself either, because this was interesting, like, when they had Alex at the beginning of the episode, the thing that I was curious about was whether they'd be, like, having the person forget themselves or forget the people that they'd lost. Like, they mm-hmm. never asked Alex what his parents' names were, and I was curious as to, like, whether, if he had been asked, whether he would have been able to give them, if you know what I mean. So, like, he remembers that he had parents and they were gone, but, like, does he know who they are? Like, or if you start to forget yourself, if you start to get taken, do you forget yourself? But we find when Stiles is taken that that's not the case. Like, he's forgotten right up into, he remembers himself right up to the point that he's taken. And I'm going to be very curious how that comes up later with stuff like Peter, because I've got this feeling that Peter is going to have been forgotten a while ago, and that it is going to be mm-hmm. a really clever but backhanded explanation as to why we're being like, who's Peter, if you know what I mean. Like, we're going to have to look into kind of the consistency there of, like, when the last time he was mentioned, you know, between Malia and the Desert Wolf and stuff like that, maybe. But I get this feeling that maybe it's going to be like, hey, the reason no one's talked about Crazy Uncle Peter in the mental ward is because no one knows he ever existed.
Yeah.
So, or maybe
I would be really into that.
Maybe it won't be done like that, but I just get this feeling it could work, so...
Yeah, I'd be really into that. I think that would be cool. Even if it was a bit, like, backtracking, like, that's fine. As long as it's consistent, as long as it makes sense, like, as long as everything lines up, I think that would be really cool.
Ian Bowen is actually in Australia right now. I'm doing two conventions in cities that I do not live in. So that there's one coming up this weekend that I was maybe going to try and see if they would allow me to come to, then I would travel to, but if they do not allow me to come to it for free, then I probably cannot afford to fly there, but I would have loved to talk to him about what's coming up on the season. So, maybe we'll try and get in touch with him later in the year or something. We know people who know people. We might be able to make that happen. And he's really fun to talk to about that mm-hmm. character because he believes in him so deeply. So yeah, I'm excited to see what happens with Peter there.
Yeah, definitely, me too. Now, out of the Sheriff, Scott, and Malia, which one was the hardest for you to watch forgetting Styles?
Oh, the Sheriff.
Yeah.
That was like,
I mean, that is the correct answer.
The fact that he was like, we're going to fix it, it's okay. But he was just like, because it's his job as the sheriff to like, oh, a child that's freaking out, I will comfort this child. And then it's just like, that one really stood out. Like, I can't really remember, like, the context of Scott and Malia's, just,
Well, the other two were, like, Scott was over the phone, and Malia was to
right.
Lydia.
Scott was over
so
the phone, that's right.
It was very much with the sheriff style seeing somebody forget him and then freaking out. And I think not only was it that, but also the fact that, like, this is his father. This is somebody who he is clearly extremely close to. They've been through a lot together as a family. Mm. And for him to just be like, what's your name? Ugh, it's a punch to the
and
heart.
The fact that he thought it was going to be okay because Sheriff was saying all the right things. He was like, we're going to work this out together and stuff like that because he's a good...
Called him son.
Sheriff. It's just, oh, what a wreck. What a nightmare. I'm really curious as to how it's going to affect Scott and the Sheriff. Like, if they're going to have known each other for any other reason, you know, or if the Sheriff's not going to know about the supernatural now or anything like that.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. Gosh, because you got to think about how much one person has an influence on your life and you take them away.
This is what Jeff was saying in your interview this week. Mm-hmm. Like the theme, you know, supernatural or not, is like how much influence, like how much does one person really change your life? And like, if you think about it, if you go backwards over the puzzle pieces, like what would not be in your life if you didn't know that one person, if you know what I mean. Like, if you didn't, and I sit there sometimes and I think about that. I'm like, interesting. Like, for example, there's this one, there's this blogger on the internet called Cleo Linda, who I spoke about recently on our other podcast, actually, because she wrote these really funny recaps. But she is the reason, like, her blog is the reason that I got LiveJournal, the old social media LiveJournal. And if I had never come across her blog and wanted to follow her with LiveJournal, my entire life would be a completely different direction because of what getting LiveJournal ended up doing in terms of the people I ended up meeting online, like Megan and Leo, and then moving to the UK, and then, like, basically, like, it would literally have changed the direction of my life if I had not come across this this person that had influenced me to do this thing in my life. And that's just, like, an online, like, thing. Like, you know, you think about, like, the influence of your daily life of various people and, like, what you wouldn't have or what your general experience wouldn't be like or would be like without that person, whether you would have come to certain things in the same way, whether you wouldn't have come to certain things in the same way. And it's going to be interesting to see how much detail they put into that with Styles being gone, like how many things it's going to affect or how they're going to explain it away. And it's really interesting, another fan fiction trope, like an AU alternate universe, so they're going to have this whole season of basically AU where people for example, if they do want the sheriff to know about the supernatural, they're going to have come up with a really good reason for it. They're going to have come up with a whole nother backstory, a whole nother life. And I'm interested to see how they do that and everything, like, surrounding it, basically. So, yeah.
It's going to be rough. But, I mean, I guess the one high point here is that Lydia remembers the longest. And she says she won't forget him. Of course, we see what happens later on. But I'm wondering why, Lydia, does this go back to what I was saying before about directly focusing on the problem, realize what is happening to Styles and being able to remember and hang on a little bit longer? Is it because they've saved each other's lives? Because that was brought up as well. Is it because they love each other? Styles told Lydia that he loves her. And we don't know for sure if that same exact feeling on that same level is reciprocated. But if it is, could this be a reason why she remembers a little longer?
My instant thought was that it was something to do with her powers, but we don't know. Because
also possible.
Because her powers didn't affect, like, you know, she was not able to sense the people who vanished, the parents who vanished. So maybe it's not to do with her powers. You know, it could be because she's aware of the Ghost Riders, like, that they'd figured that out together, so she knew what the problem was. She knew that people were getting vanished. She knew that that was something that they were prepared for. So, you know, again, that direct focus could be an aspect. So, I don't know. I loved so much of this episode that we'd seen before. Like, the cold open and, like, so much in the trailer of these peak moments, like this Styles and Lydia moment. And this, you know, they did give us a little bit extra in that they had kind of him describing the various other things. And I really loved the difference between him saying, like, you know, remember how I had a crush on you in junior year, you know, freshman year and sophomore year and junior year. And then at the end when he says, remember that I love you, I love that he, like, acknowledges the difference between his past behavior and now, like, that those two things are not the same thing, because that's what we've been saying for so long as well, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I really love that. And that his I love you doesn't necessarily even mean romantically, you know, like, you know, we know that that is a factor, but that that's not necessarily what that was meant to mean, you know, that it was a much more bigger than just romantic I love you. And
yeah, I think that is so important to remember, especially for people who might not be into them as a couple, which is, like, totally fine. I really think that's where the show is going. Like, I mean, I'd be really shocked if they didn't go there by the end.
You may have to just accept it or
yeah, but the thing is,
yeah,
the thing is that I think it's so important that they haven't been together. They kissed. They definitely have kissed, but it wasn't really a romantic kiss. And it also was, like, they've been through so much that those feelings turn from a crush to something deeper. And I think the fact that that deep feeling is so mature and it's so well-rounded that, like you said, love romantically is a factor, but he genuinely cares about her as a person and she genuinely cares about him as a person. Even when you take that romantic aspect away, it does mean so much more. And I think given where they started and where they're ending up, that in and of itself as friendship arc, as two people who care about each other a lot, is really great. And I think they're playing into that really well right in the premiere.
Yeah, for sure. But I liked that they had that little, you know, moment that we didn't see in the trailer, you know, the ongoing description that I mentioned, you know, the first girl I danced with saved each other's lives, you know, crush, blah blah blah, because I did feel like that we had a lot of the big moments of this episode already seen, and I wasn't too sure why they chose to air so much, if you know what I mean. Do you think they were worried that people wouldn't be interested enough? Like, why do you think they chose to air so much of the high stakes moments before we actually saw the episode?
I think it's because there's so much more to come. And I guess this kind of jumps ahead a little bit, but I do want to talk about this. Like, my final thoughts on the episode was that it moved really fast. you have that confession of love already, and Styles is already gone. We already see him taken by the Ghost Riders. This first episode set up the Stydia romance. It set up the possibility of Liam as an alpha, the problems that might be coming up between Hayden and Liam, Lydia's powers, and what she can do with them, and the idea that maybe everybody is kind of moving off in their different directions, you know, whether or not the town needs Scott anymore. I think they showed us so much from the premiere because there is so much more yet to come, and maybe they wanted to hook us like you often do in premieres without giving away too much else what's going on. And I think that was actually really clever, and it sort of makes you go, okay, if all of this has already happened, what the hell could be coming up next? Because you know it's only going to get worse slash better slash worse.
Oh, that's hopeful. I mean, or stressful or something. So,
both.
yeah, that sounds fun.
Yeah, but speaking of that, we do see the Riders take Styles away, and we get a really up-close look at its face. It's pretty brief, but, like, they're scary.
I couldn't really see it that well on my computer.
It's got this, like, dementor look to it almost. The kind of pulled face where it's got that blackness over the top of it, and it's sort of, like, devoid of anything solid. It's got, like, the sockets in the mouth, and it just... ugh. They're gross.
Any theory about what they are? Like, are they, you know, like, what it actually is? Like, supernatural?
I don't.
I mean, it's obviously not human because it's such an ancient thing, but, like, what is it?
But were they human once? Like, how did these creatures come to be?
I do not know. And
I think we'll have to wait on that just because Teen Wolf tends to put their own spin on any mythology that they decide to tackle.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so he's gone. They came and they did have that moment because I theorized about whether it was going to be whether his getting taken was going to be a choice, if you know what I mean, or, you know, was he going on a rescue mission, or was it just that he had, was it just that he couldn't get away in time? It wasn't a rescue mission, but he definitely stopped trying, if you know what I mean, to save himself. So, like, he stopped, you know, trying to start the car, and he was like, it's too late. And then he was like, this is what's going to happen. So how did you feel about that kind of acceptance or whatever?
It was an interesting choice because Lydia was obviously like, what are you doing? Like, we can still get out of here. Of course, she couldn't see the Ghost Riders, but I think Styles kind of knew this was the end of the road for him in terms of, there clearly are plenty of them around. They are coming for him. They're probably not going to give up. He knows that Alex was taken despite being in that jail cell. He kind of, I think, knew that it was going to happen one way or another, and he might as well say everything that he wants to say and try to get her to remember him in order to give himself a little bit of hope that somebody will come find him.
Also, like, I felt a little bit like, you know, to get rid of, them, like, oh, take me, you know, like, once he's gone, because Lydia was with him and he was like, don't look at them, you know, don't look at them. So the sooner he gives in, the sooner they leave with him and without Lydia, if you know what I mean. Like, if they're, you know, if they're fighting back, that's another person that could get marked or infected or whatever they want to call it.
So self-sacrifice, which just makes this episode even more brutal.
Mm. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
That's a good theory, though. I do like that. But to wrap up the episode, the discussion, the next day at school, Lydia has a feeling that she was supposed to do something, but she can't remember what it was. And obviously that was, you know, find Styles, look into what's going on with Styles. And I think it's interesting that she has also forgotten, although maybe not as clearly as the others have, and how, like, what's going to be the trigger to bring her back to remembering him and helping the others remember him as well.
Yeah, because it sounds like, you know, she's going to be the one leading the charge to get people to remember, like we've seen from the trailer, you know, with the sheriff and stuff like that. So I'm wondering if she's going to actually remember him, or if she's going to just believe in remembering him, if she's going to find proof that he was and believe it, as opposed to genuinely get her memories back. If it's going to be faith or actual memory, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's a good point.
So yeah, that's what happened in this episode.
Oh man, so much more to come.
Stressful. Do we have any major news going on from that, like, in terms of things that are going to happen, like spoilers that are going to happen? Obviously we have the Tank Wolf situation, but how much news has been released from here on out? Like, what could you predict from here on out?
Honestly, not a whole lot, which is weird because sometimes I feel like they give away so much. And this season, like, I don't think we know anything about what's going on in 6B right now, which they're currently filming.
Yeah, except for the fact that Lyndon is directing and Posey's directing. Mm-hmm. Everyone's getting a turn.
Yeah.
The Teen Wolf, like, social media page has been really weird. Like, it's been doing, like, countdown, you know, of, like, 5 days, 3 days to go, you know, till the new season. But they've been, like, it's all, like, moments of, like, importance, like their header images, you know, like Scott and Styles like touching each other in a brotherly fashion and like a big lightning bolt between them, and like they've been having the different moments, you know, the trailers, like the Remember That I Love You trailer, but they've also been having like things like basically encouraging people to remember, like to remember stuff about the show, like a playlist of musical moments, like, you know, mm-hmm. big musical moments. And then they had scenes, photos, that I just don't remember ever happening. And maybe it was, like, behind-the-scenes stuff. For example, there was, like, one of 4 days to go, and it's, like, a scene of... It's, like, a Jackson, Lydia, Scott, and Allison, like, around a bonfire. Or maybe it was literally a candid. Maybe it was a photo of the actors from that filming period. But then there was another photo of Jackson and Lydia that looked in character that I don't remember ever happening on the show. It was their 5 days to go. Painful memories, never forgotten. And it's like a Polaroid of Jackson holding Allison across his lap. Sorry, not Lydia, Allison. Like, so Colton and Crystal. And it says, painful memories are never forgotten. What does either of these people have to do with the upcoming season? Where did this photo come from? Like, what? Like, do you think that either of them are coming back? Like, or is this just like, hey, remember things that happened on the show? Here's a photo of a scene that never happened. Because
I think specifically that Allison and Jackson photo was a sort of promo season one kind of thing, because there's that very brief moment where like, oh, maybe Allison and Jackson are interested in each other. And it never panned out in season one, but I think some of those were from like way back when. It's definitely like a Throwback Thursday kind of thing that they've been doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think part of it is the theme of the series or of the season. Remember, you know, don't forget Styles, don't forget what's been going on with the show, because they pulled that stunt with like taking down the social media for a few days and then thanking fans for remembering them and then bringing it back.
Yeah.
I also think that it's just the fact that it's the last season.
Yeah, I know.
And they want us to remember everything that's happened and kind of celebrate the show in its final hurrah.
I know. I was just really, this particular, the Jackson photo, I was like, wow, okay, this is, yeah, this is, like, weird. Never mind. The Jackson and Allison one, I was like, really? Really? What's going on? So, yeah, I don't know. I don't even feel prepared for all of the things that might happen. Like, especially your interview with Jeff when he's like, how do we do all the big things we wanted to do? How do we kill that main character and stuff like that? Wow.
Yeah, I was like, you just had to throw that line in there, didn't you, Jeff?
Wow.
I see you. You're just trying to cause panic.
What a horrible man. So that's... Thanks for that. That was really good. So... Yeah, anything could happen, it sounds like. Literally anything could happen. And that's sort of worrying, I think.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, definitely everybody go read the interview. We'll link to it in the show notes because it was a really great interview. And I got to ask a bunch of questions, and he not only talked about, like, upcoming season stuff, but also just, like, behind-the-scenes stuff. And, like, he had a great bit in there about, like, how far Scott has come and how far Posey has come, and just it was just really nice and reflective and awesome. If you read the interview, the tone is pretty positive. And yes, he does say, like, how are we going to kill that one character? And how are we going to have somebody do this horrible, terrible thing that they never thought they were going to do? And I'm like, are you trying to give us a hint or, like, what's going on here? But I have a feeling that I think Jeff knows and everybody on this show knows how much Teen Wolf means to the fans, and I don't think they're going to, like, go crazy overboard and, like, have Styles murder Scott or something like that, you know? Like, I don't think it's gonna be I don't think it's gonna be terrible. I think I asked how high the stakes were gonna be, and he said, you know, it's Teen Wolf, like, the stakes are always gonna be high and you always want to make sure that it's compelling, but I think they're also very aware that this is the final season and you want to leave it at a place where people are content with the ending. So it's going to be a little bit of a mixed bag, but I have faith that the final hurrah is going to be a good one.
Yeah, I really don't know where to go from here. I don't know what to expect from here at all. I don't know how Tank Wolf is going to in any way become relevant, you know, or what his aims might be to, aside from teaching science in a high school. Like, obviously, the fact that he's an alpha werewolf doesn't necessarily make him evil, but the fact that he's a Nazi probably does. So, like, what aim could the Nazis have with werewolves in 2016? So that's my big question. And why did they feel the need to tell this story? Like, how is it going to turn out? If I was I'd be wanting to get revenge on the Dread Doctors for keeping me in a tank for 70 years. But, you know... Is he necessarily going to be evil? I assume he is, but I don't understand. So, yeah.
Yeah. There's still so much more to go. Like, so much has happened in this premiere, but there's so much more to go. So we're just going to have to see what happens there. But finishing off the episode, you want to give everybody a little reminder about our other project?
Oh, yeah, I suppose so. So you may have seen, like, in the last few weeks on our Twitter account that we've launched a separate second side podcast. We have basically put together a team, myself and Karen and a few of our other friends and podcasting family to create a new show called Not About the Weather, which is, yes, cleverly the same initials as Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. So it's Not About the Weather podcast because we are both based in a hub website together, and we are using the Twitter account to be shared, as it is the podcast we are growing out of the ashes of Teen Wolf bursting into flames and ending, basically.
Oh, that made me, like, really emotional.
Sorry. So it's a project that we have started, and we started it now because we wanted to sort of kick it off and get into the groove of what we were going to be doing. And, you know, it's going to be more than just Karen and myself, so we won't be too overtaxed while Teen Wolf is actually airing. But we wanted to create a project that to go hand in hand with the audience we have on Not Another Teen Wolf podcast that would allow us to keep podcasting on a regular basis after Teen Wolf ends. So, obviously, there are podcasts for shows that no longer run. You know, there are Buffy podcasts, there are whatever, like, you know, podcasts about series that, you know, are no longer airing. But we don't know how much mileage we'd get out of a Teen Wolf-only podcast consistently for the rest of time. Yes, we will continue to do episodes of this podcast when stuff occurs. You know, if there's big relevant Teen Wolf news, or just if we decide to, you know, undertake some sort of reunion project or, you know, something like that. But we wanted to keep up a regular podcast that was not necessarily tied just to Teen Wolf. So that's what we're doing on Not About the Weather. It's a conversational kind of pop culture commentary show. It does have like a theme in which we get together and talk about, you know, something we're excited about that week and something that we're pissed off about that week. And you can listen to a few episodes of that at the moment. So that is what we're going to be doing on the side. That is what you would have seen a bit of action for on the NATWP Twitter account and stuff like that. And we do hope to bring some guests onto that show that, you know, we had on this show in the past, as well as guests from other walks of life as well, that would be just coming on to talk about, not necessarily Teen Wolf, but to talk about their other projects or just conversation, just chat about life in general, anyone who we like conversing with. So if you've listened to Not About the Weather and you've listened to this show, hit us up and tell us who you think would make for a good conversationalist in our regular structure over there. So I can tell you I've had conversations with quite a few people about it, and there's one person who I spoke to today who definitely wants to come on, who you guys will enjoy hearing from in that context a lot, I think. But we're hoping it continues really well. We're obviously not out to replace this show directly, certainly not while the show, you know, Teen Wolf is still airing, which it will be till, you know, May or so next year. But it's a project that we didn't want to wait to start until Teen Wolf finished. We wanted to have them going side by side in order to get you guys used to it if you are going to miss our voices too much or something when Teen Wolf finishes, which sounds very arrogant. But I don't know, it's just something we wanted to do with the audience that we have for this show. So hopefully it's going well so far. If it's not, you don't have to listen, that's okay. But you can basically, if you go to natwpodcast.com, so the same handle as our Twitter, natwpodcast.com. It's a nice little hub website for both of the shows, for Not Another Teen Wolf podcast and Not About the Weather, and you can kind of see there the connection between the shows. So, yeah, that's what we're doing. Karen, how are you feeling about it?
I'm really excited about it. Yeah, it makes me a little emotional. I don't like the idea of Teen Wolf ending, but I think it's less arrogance in terms of, you know, oh, if you're going to miss us, we have this other project, and more like, we literally cannot stop podcasting with each other because, like, what is our lives otherwise? Mm-hmm. Because it's become such a routine and such a place where, like, I mean, a lot of us, and there are a few people that I talk to every day, but like Nat and I have been doing this for so long, and the idea of not regularly podcasting with each other, we get to do rewatchable, but it's not the same, and that's got a different dynamic, and I think I would really miss this usual back and forth. So I'm really excited about it. It lets us talk about things that we don't normally get to talk about on this podcast. It's very general and doesn't necessarily have to do with fandom. And I enjoy that a lot, too, because it's just like, hey, let me talk to my friends for an hour and a half. And, you know, maybe some other people actually enjoy our discussion at the same time.
Mm, yeah, it's definitely, you know, people don't really pick up the phone and are like, hey, let's talk on the phone about our stuff. Maybe they do, I don't know, but I feel like they don't as much. But this is sort of the closest to that of it's not really a fly on the wall conversation. There is certainly an amount of structure, but it's definitely designed to just be talking about, like, how we're feeling about certain things that week. With occasional themed episodes. Occasionally we'll be doing an episode themed around a certain subject where we're all talking about that subject. But, yeah, in general, it's just literally like, hey, what do you like this week? Or what do you hate this week? And I've enjoyed it so far, so I think it's gonna be pretty sustainable, and it doesn't necessarily have a shelf life, unlike Teen Wolf. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And we'll try not to have too much crossover, obviously. Like, you know, if you want to listen to this show for the Teen Wolf content, we're not necessarily going to be over on Not About the Weather being like, my obsession this week was Teen Wolf. It's like, yeah, we have a whole other podcast for that. So it'll really be the stuff that we don't already do a lot of work on, like whether that's on Hyperbole or other podcasts. It'll be stuff like, hey, you know, a thing that is not necessarily something that we talk about on a regular basis, but that we want to, you know, that wouldn't necessarily get a whole podcast every week about it, but that we want to talk for 15 minutes one week about. So I've actually had a lot of people say, I've had a handful of people say that they've gotten a lot of recommendations for stuff that they have ended up loving from listening to this podcast, from where like, hey, this is like in that show, or hey, this is like a book, like off topic things, or like some of the side project episodes and stuff like that. So that's also quite a big inspiration for us to talk to you guys about. Like, so if you are one of those people, it's like, hey, those podcast freaks gave me really good book recommendation. This is going to have like that times 1,000, because it'll literally be what we're doing every week. Like, it won't just be incidental, off topic, this thing. That's the reason that we're there. So there's that as well.
Yeah, and kind of tying into that, actually, one of the things that I was screaming about on Not About the Weather the other week was Sweet Vicious, and you can obviously tune in that episode to, like, get my thoughts and feelings on that. But just as a reminder, Sweet Vicious is airing after Teen Wolf. It premieres same time, like, same day, I mean.
Same week, same day.
Yeah, and it's 10 o'clock, whereas Teen Wolf is 9 o'clock. Guys, this show is great. I've gotten a bunch of people into it. I'm trying to get more people into it because I think it's a really, really fantastic show, and it's doing something very different, and MTV is very excited about it from everything that I've heard kind of behind the scenes. Like, they are 1,000% behind this show, and that just gives me a lot of faith that it has the sustainability to keep going and maybe become another flagship show for MTV now that Teen Wolf is going off the air. So very powerful, very funny, very dark as well, and violent, which is kind of like me all wrapped up into one. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but somehow it just works together. So check out Sweet Vicious. The first 3 episodes are online, so you guys can at least watch those and see what you think. And if you like it, keep watching. And yeah, they are. You can watch all 3.
Yep. On the internet for free, public.
On the internet for free, MTV.com. Wow. This sounds so much like a promotion, and I swear to God, guys, like, I'm not I just really love this show, so this is just me being passionate about it. Like, I swear MTV didn't pay me to say that.
I believe you. MTV's never paid us for anything. Just thought we'd make it clear again.
Yeah. Seriously.
We have not been paid to make this podcast for 4 years. So, yeah, that's about it. We will, talk to you next week about the second episode of Teen Wolf, of Teen Wolf Season 6. Do we know what that one is called?
I could probably look it up.
Hang on. Let's see what it's called and make a theory about it. We can have a Britney's Brainstorms, except it's not. It's a rewatchable in-joke, guys. It's called It's called Superposition.
Oh.
Have you got a clock chiming in your house right now?
It's my downstairs neighbor.
It sounds like a big, like a grandfather clock, like a Big Ben, like,
yeah,
chiming clock.
It just turned 11 p.m., was chiming on the hour.
Superposition, I have no idea what that's meant to mean. Let's Google it. Got anything?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Before I Google it?
Well, I just... my initial thought, like, I thought, like superimposed, but that's definitely not the same thing.
It seems to actually tie into the, what Hayden was saying, you know, when Tank Wolf asked her about the Schrodinger's cat and how that relates to light. This is also a physics principle. It's a quantum theory principle that describes a challenging concept about the nature and behavior of matter and forces at the subatomic level. So whatever the frack that means.
And they were talking about light, right? Yeah, like light being matter and...
Yeah, so it's basically meant to mean... the principle states that for all linear systems, so things that go actually correctly in a time or in a straight line, the net response at a given place and time caused by two or more stimuli is the sum of the responses which would have been caused by each individually. So basically perhaps two things are going to meet in the middle and be... you know, Tank Wolf and Ghost Riders or, you know, something smaller than that. But the idea is that the two separate things are going to come together and create responses bigger than they would have individually or interact with each other. I don't know. I don't like science. Who the hell on this show has been looking up this science nonsense? I'm not into it. But yeah, I think it is tied to that conversation that they had in the science class and that there could be.
Yeah, and I mean, it all really goes back to Stiles too, because Stiles is, and everyone that goes missing, you know, they're not there, they're not alive, they're not dead, you don't really know what they are. It's the whole idea of, like, looking inside the box. So, like, the idea that it's talking about two different things or one thing kind of acting in two different ways, I just keep going back to the whole, like, parallel universe thing. So that's all very interesting. But I'm definitely excited to see how that plays out in episode two then. But that's pretty much it for this episode. And we will chat with you guys next week.
Yes, we will. All right. So enjoy. Bye-bye.
Bye.
There's a killer on the road. His brain is squirming like a dog. Take a long holiday. Let your children play. If you give this man a ride, sweet memory will die. Killer on the road.
Hey, this is Jeff Davis. You're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, my favorite podcast in the world.
I think also if you just looked at them as people.
Hang on. It's still doing it. I'm not sure why. Just
okay.
Give this thing.
I'll keep talking. Tell me when it's cleared up.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. Keep going.
Is it still bad, or is it okay now?
No, it's worse. Sing the alphabet.
I'm not singing for you.